today on Annenberg Radio News.
I was going to be like this traveling journalist, and I was going to like report on all these like soulful things like AIDS in Africa, and I was going to like change people's lives.
We hear from recent college graduates about how they are faring in the bleak job market. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 19th, 2012. I'm Benjamin Gottlieb. Just a week before its grand opening, a train on the Exposition Metro line collided with a car this morning during a test run. The car was making a left turn into the USC campus on Watt Way when it was T-boned by the train. The driver of the car was immediately transported to California Hospital. His condition has not yet been released. Luis Inuenza, a Metro employee, says the operator of the Metro train was not injured.
When it's a train versus an automobile, the car always loses.
Metro says the Expo line will still open as scheduled on April 28th. President Obama's new drug control policy is coming under attack for being more of the same. The administration's drug czar is still in L.A. today to sell the program. As Melissa Runnels reports, he met today with black clergy members to enlist their support.
It's essentially been the exact same allocation of funds, the exact same approach since the days of going back to Nixon. So it's really just the same old, same old.
That's Megan Ralston of Drug Policy Alliance's Los Angeles office reacting to President Obama's new drug control strategy released this week. The White House Office of National Drug Control Policy recommends spending in 2012 roughly $10.1 billion on prevention and treatment, $9.4 billion on law enforcement and incarceration, $3.6 billion on interrupting drug trafficking, and $2.1 billion on international cooperation to shut down the flow of drugs to the U.S. Ralston thinks Gil Kerlikowske, the president's drug czar, and the administration are trying to do the right thing, but they've got the wrong end of the stick. She thinks the U.S. would do better to decriminalize possession of small amounts of drugs and send people for treatment, not to prison. She says polls show that Americans overwhelmingly support this approach, particularly for medical marijuana.
So the policies that are in place at a federal level and the rhetoric that's happening at a federal level is really inconsistent and out of touch with what a lot of Americans want and what a lot of Americans need and really the direction the rest of the country is headed.
Kerlikowske has been touring the country to tout the president's new strategy. He stopped by Los Angeles's first African Methodist Episcopal Church to highlight the Drug-Free Community Support Program, which is a part of the new strategy offering small grants to community coalitions that address youth substance abuse. Standing in the church's sunny garden with a fountain burbling in the background, Kerlikowske says he thinks local churches are effective partners for drug-free communities because...
As we said, these are folks that touch people every single day. I can travel the country as I do every week and not begin to touch the number of people that these folks see in the community on a regular basis.
He says that the new strategy will also focus more resources on a rising plague, prescription drug abuse.
It was just a few years ago that no one talked about the problem of prescription drugs. Now prescription drugs take more lives in this country than heroin and cocaine overdoses combined. And these are
whether the new strategy will be effective in combating this and other forms of drug abuse remains to be seen. For Annenberg Radio News, I'm Melissa Runnels.
USC is known for its school spirit, and along with that pride comes lots and lots of cardinal and gold gear. Hats, T-shirts, socks, you name it. Today, students gathered to protest the way that school apparel is being made. They're angry that the university has signed a 10-year contract with a company that they say uses sweatshops and unfair labor practices. To make a point, the student protesters took off their clothes. Our Emily Frost joined a sea of bare midriffs this afternoon to investigate.
In the parking lot of the university's Unitarian Church, speakers blasted pump-up music and stacks of pizza boxes and liters of soda began to perspire in the noonday heat while students undressed. Hadley Greswold is a freshman at USC.
We'll actually welcome people to get naked if they want to.
But no one did. The crowd of about 30 students kept on their sports bras, shorts, and boxers, leaving plenty of exposed flesh to paint slogans like "Expose the Truth" in red.
The message we're trying to send is that we'd rather not wear Trojan apparel than wear Trojan apparel that's made in sweatshops.
The group sponsoring all the action is the Student Coalition Against Labor Exploitation. They were sparked into action after ESPN filed an investigative report revealing terrible working conditions in Cambodian factories. ESPN alleges that Silver Star Merchandising, the apparel company used by USC, uses factories with substandard working conditions. Max Hoyland, another student protester, says the group is pressing USC President Nikias to adopt a solution, an independent monitoring system that will enforce workers' rights.
There's a factory monitor called the Workers' Rights Consortium. This is a not-for-profit, the only one in the world that monitors factories.
USC's Director for Trademark Licensing and Social Responsibility, Matt Curran, says that USC has a strict code of ethics, and Hoyland agrees.
USC has actually a very good code of conduct.
Curran says USC turns down a lot of vendors. Out of 100 applicants, only about 15% will make the grade. But the protesters say the mechanisms USC is using to review labor practices are ineffective. And without an independent review organization like the Workers' Rights Consortium, abuses will continue. Curran says the university hasn't ruled that option out, but they need more information about the consortium. Protester Hadley Greswold says organizers want the university to work with them.
And when they say that students really care, I think that they will sign on. That's the most important thing.
If not, they'll keep at it, she says. After bodies had been painted and pizza consumed, the group grabbed their signs and banners and left the parking lot en masse, headed straight for USC President Nikias' office. Emily Frost, Annenberg Radio News.
Community members are marching from downtown to LAPD headquarters at this hour to protest the disproportionate number of minority youths behind bars. Keith James is an organizer with Stop Mass Incarceration Network, the national organization behind the demonstrations. He says the United States imprisons more people than any other country in the world, and that racial profiling plays a large part.
Many people in this society, they think, and they've been told, that the mass incarceration is a matter of crime. It's a matter of the war on drugs, war on gangs, these type of things. This is actually about the criminalization of people, and especially of a generation of youth.
On this nationwide day of action, demonstrators are also gathering in Atlanta, Chicago, Houston, New York City, San Francisco, and Seattle. Employees of America's largest retailer, Walmart, started a national campaign for better working conditions in Crenshaw today. Rosalie Murphy reports.
Dan Henman has an anniversary this week with Walmart.
Yeah. I work at Walmart starting on the 17th I just passed. That's 3 years.
To support his son and put himself through school.
I do a little bit of everything. You know, LP sometimes. You know what I mean? I work electronics. Played management at times, to be honest with you. I do it up.
But despite all this history, he's not happy about the store springing up in Los Angeles.
I don't live around Chinatown. Yeah. But if I did, I would tell him definitely not to open up. Because I feel if you're going to open up, you got to treat your people correctly. Actually, Walmart doesn't, things they promise, they don't fall through with it. You know what I mean? I've been promised I get interviews for different departments that I haven't seen an interview yet.
Hindman and about 100 other Walmart workers met in Los Angeles this week at a national Making Change at Walmart conference. There, they put together a list of demands to present at the Baldwin Hills Crenshaw Plaza Walmart today. The protesters say their schedules are irregular, and they're not earning as much as Walmart promised. They're disrespected at work. They want higher wages, guaranteed health insurance, and Walmart's promise that it will invest its profits in communities. But Michael Jones, CEO of the Crenshaw Chamber of Commerce, says that's what Walmart already does in South L.A. When the store opened about a decade ago, it created more than 500 jobs, most of which went to residents.
It was a tremendous, tremendous impact. You know, before that time, you know, there were people that were out of work and they made it happen. I understand people will talk about unfair wages compared to what? If somebody's unemployed and they're getting paid even minimum wage, is that an unfair wage? We've had a tough, tough economy and, you know, people can have some dignity.
In a statement released today, Walmart said they do offer competitive pay and affordable benefits. But this is just the beginning. The workers leaving the conference in L.A. today plan to air their grievances at Walmarts all over the country. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
And now for the weather. We're expecting generally clear skies this evening, with lows hovering around 60 degrees. As for tomorrow, dare I say it, the sunshine is back. We're looking at an afternoon in the mid-80s in the city and in the mid-90s in the valley. Saturday should be equally beautiful with an afternoon high of 81. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we hear from the city maven herself about her thoughts on Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa's State of the City address last night. Unemployment for graduates with liberal arts degrees is up by 9%. For our series on 20-somethings, Michelle Malkasian explains how it feels to have a college degree, but a job that does not require one.
Graduation. A time to celebrate your academic achievements in higher education. To join the professional workforce. And arrive in the real world. But what if you don't have that job upon graduation? I graduated from USC 9 months ago, and I'm working at a department store. Retail. I saw graduation as the day I would have it all figured out. On the contrary, despite my ideal fantasy, I'm right back where I started.
Mom? Dad?
Okay, so it's not that bad. But I'm still trying to come up with an acceptable answer to the looming question of, what are you going to do now, Michelle? I go to grab a drink with my friends Alyssa and Katie at the Yard House. Turns out their situations are a lot like mine. Katie has a job at the pool. She wants to work for the government someday. Alyssa had hoped to be in med school by now. She's working with me at the department store.
I was so happy to get my diploma, and I was excited for the pictures to post on Facebook to prove that I had graduated, which sounds awful, but I was like, this is my proof, because I don't have a job to show for it right now.
Oh, they all want to know if I'm in school, what I majored in, all that good stuff. And then I tell them, and they look at me like, oh, and you're teaching swimming in La Mirada, because why? But it just sucks. And my relatives, like, speaking of people that don't understand, were like, why are you working in retail? Like, you went to school. And I'm just like, you know what? There's no jobs out there. This is the best I can do. And it pays well.
I don't even tell people where I graduated from, because immediately they assume, like, you must be a failure in life. Nobody wants you.
Our waitress joins in. Turns out she's a USC grad, too. Her tray is full of drinks for the next table, but she stops.
I mean, if you were to ask me, like, how I would have pictured my life when I was in high school and, like, what I wanted to do, like, I was going to be, like, this traveling journalist, and I was going to, like, report on all these, like, soulful things like AIDS in Africa, and I was going to, like, change people's lives, and I was going to be, like, this powerful, strong woman and, like, you know, eat guys' souls for breakfast, like, independent, like, just beautiful, like, skinny, and, like, none of those things happened.
The other day at work, as I'm ringing a customer up, I tell him where I graduated from, and shaking his head in confusion, he asks, is this where you saw yourself after graduating from USC?
Hi, how are you today?
For the rest of the day, I was thinking, have I really ended up at a department store? I know people who have degrees, who work retail while they figure out what they want to do, and then 20 years later, they're still working retail. In these times, it's hard to keep your hopes up. I think a lot about what Katie said when we were out for drinks.
The fact that this economy is horrible and there's no jobs makes it so much worse, makes you even more freaked out. Now I have no idea what's going on and I'm really stressed out.
Me too, Katie. Hopefully things will be looking up soon. As of now, Katie's thinking about grad school. Alyssa's still deciding if she wants to apply to med school. And our waitress is interning in the PR department of Morgan Stanley, anxiously awaiting a possible full-time position. What we're all doing now is a stepping stone to bigger things. Another customer told me, treat every day as a networking opportunity. And don't worry, you're on the path to success. Turns out she's a dean at Cal State Fullerton. Maybe she's right. Maybe one day I'll be the traveling journalist who eats guys' souls for breakfast. In the meantime, at least I have a job. Michelle Malkasian, Annenberg Radio News.
South Central Los Angeles has an abundance of small, eclectic stores dedicated to all different kinds of practices, services, and religions. As our Kira Brecky explored Main Street, she stumbled upon a woman, her store, and her saints.
This is the music of Sonia Gastelum's Botanica Arula No. 2, a small yet amply decorated store located in the depths of South Central on Main Street. The compact store is dedicated to the religion Santeria.
It's from Cuba and Africa. It's Afro-Cuban, okay? We believe in saints and we believe in spirits.
Santeria, or Way of the Saints in Spanish, is dedicated to devotees building powerful relationships with mortal spirits called orishas. Gastelum began practicing 35 years ago and has since become a high priest.
We do a lot of ceremonies too, spiritual here. Cleaning, spiritual cleaning.
Gastelum opened her first Botanica in the Linwood neighborhood of Los Angeles 10 years ago. The shop in South Central was opened just last year.
When they come in here, they ask me, you know, what is this store about? Because they're not familiar with this store. And then I tell them, oh, this has got to do with, you know, things of the religion and everything. So they start asking me, you know, what do you see in me or what do you think?
While there is nothing fortune-telling about Santeria, Sonia says many customers come in seeking guidance. Some studies report that nearly 1 million people practice Santeria in the United States alone. But an accurate number is hard to know for sure due to the stigmas of practicing. One reason being that animal sacrifices are central to the religion.
We sacrifice, but we don't make them suffer. A lot of people these days, they're not explaining and they're not understanding. They hear the word Santeria is like, oh my God, you know, that's devilish or something. But it isn't.
UCLA law professor Eugene Volokh says that state constitutions provide different levels of protection to religious practices. Volokh says that California is one of the states that provides more protection.
The question that would have to be raised is exactly what she is doing, exactly what the relevant laws are. There are laws in California regulating the killing of animals. Some are aimed at preventing unnecessarily cruel deaths for the animals. Some are aimed at protecting hygiene. But it may very well be that what she is doing is perfectly consistent with those laws.
Without thinking about the legality behind Santeria, Sonia's store decorations are quite impressive. The walls are filled with a grand array of colorful aromatic candles. She also carries hundreds of other religious paraphernalia, including statues, crosses, soaps, oils, clothing, and more.
Well, the inspiration that I get, because everything you see here, like the skirts, I make those and we use it in our religion.
The Botanica's surrounding community is known to be drug and gang ridden, so much so that Sonia's first week open began with a shooting outside her front window. Since then, Sonia says her days are safe and she has made a point of encouraging others to accept faith.
In my house, we think that is we're not here to do bad to nobody. You know, we're here to try to help out a person, you know, not to harm them in any kind of way.
The religion has been passed down from generation to generation with the help from both storytelling and what Gastelum calls her God children.
I have about 500 godchildren, because every time you be initiated, you have a godmother. And that godmother is supposed to guide you in the religion and show you things, you know, how it's supposed to go. If I have that gift that I was initiated, I should use it for good, not for bad.
As Sonia sits behind her counter each and every day making much of the store's merchandise, nearly 20 customers visit her daily, hoping to better themselves and reach the spirits above. While some frown upon Santeria, Sonia seems quite happy. Kira Brecky, Annenberg Radio News.
Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa called for an extension of Measure R, the city's $40 billion transportation upgrade, fueled by a halfpenny tax, at his State of the City address last night. For some more insight on the mayor's last citywide address, I spoke with Alice Walton of thecitymaven.com, a news website about Los Angeles city politics and policy. She was at the mayor's State of the City address at Paramount Studios.
I'd have to say the mood of the room was actually sort of flat last night. It was a little surprising. We know the mayor is great at giving speeches, but the whole mood just felt a little flat, not quite as exciting as maybe in previous years. And that may have been in part because people really, they kind of knew what they were going to get out of the speech.
Now, there was an article that came out in the Los Angeles Times today which asserted that the mayor's legacy is hinging on the extension of Measure R, which is also interpreted or understood as an extension of the halfpenny tax. Do you agree with that? Do you think that the mayor's legacy really hinges on this?
I think that the transportation aspect of what the mayor's done is a huge part of his legacy. I would add to that that probably also education is part of that, and that was the focus of his speech last year. Because a lot of what he's done with education and with transportation is sort of lay out the groundwork, try to do things now, even though you won't necessarily see the results until many years, if not decades down the line. But I would agree with the idea that transportation is a huge part of his legacy, and I think he recognizes that, and that's why it was the focus of his speech last night.
When Measure R passed in 2008, it passed by a two-thirds majority, and that paved the way for a projected $40 billion to be injected over 30 years into Los Angeles' transportation infrastructure. For the mayor's extension of Measure R, he would also need a two-thirds majority. But that doesn't seem to be the opinion of Angelenos anymore. There was a recent poll that came out, I'm sure you know, that said around only 50% of Angelenos are into this.
That's right. So I think you're referring to the poll that came out from the Center for the Study of Los Angeles out of Loyola Marymount University. And right, it found that at this point, about 54% of Angelenos support extending this tax, which everybody already pays, the half-cent sales tax. I think it's probably not too bad for the mayor at this point that they don't have that two-thirds threshold. That is quite a number to hit. To start with, basically no publicity or really any details about the proposal and still have more than half the voters say that they'll support it, I don't think that's such a bad position to be starting out in.
On KPCC this morning, the mayor came out and said that he would be cutting, and I quote, hundreds of government jobs. Now, I was wondering, did he mention that in his State of the City address last night?
He did not, and he really did not touch on the budget at all, which I think may have played into the sort of flat mood of the room. The mayor is releasing his budget tomorrow afternoon, and that's something that people are really looking forward to because he has mentioned that there will be a large number of layoffs, that at this point, without additional revenue, the city cannot continue to provide the sorts of services that they do to residents of the city. And so people are very concerned about where are we going to find extra money, what's going to be cut, what's going to be happening to the job.
So you think it's safe to say that he purposefully left that out of his speech last night?
It probably was. He was really trying to go for an optimistic speech last night. The speech started off with a video that focused on his accomplishments since he first got into office back in 2005. And I think bringing up layoffs and bringing up the huge deficit that the city is looking at next year, it didn't really fit with that theme of optimism.
That was Alice Walton from the City Maven. I'd recommend checking out her morning coffee blog at thecitymaven.com, which has the day's headlines, news conferences, meetings, all the day's important tidbits. The Natural History Museum will be celebrating its 100th birthday next year and has some new plans for the special day. They're currently working on a new addition to the museum called North Campus, which will make the museum both indoors and outdoors. Our reporter Heather Ritchie got a preview of the new area.
There wasn't a cloud in the sky today as Natural History Museum employees showed off the new addition still under construction called North Campus. It doesn't look like much now, but when it's done, the 3.5-acre area will serve as a new front yard for the museum and a new outdoor destination for museum goers. Don Webb works for Cordell Corporation and was involved with the master planning.
There's something really deliciously ironic about taking the natural history and putting it back out into nature.
The new addition will include gardens, ponds, streams, and exhibits for butterflies, birds, and bugs. The gardens will allow visitors to learn to plant their own gardens and will have flowers blooming year-round. It's funded in part by the County of Los Angeles and the California Department of Parks and Recreation. Mia Lair headed up the landscaping design. She hopes this will give city residents an opportunity to deepen their understanding of the natural world before walking through the actual museum's doors.
Connect Angelenos to the nature in the heart of the city, connect to the museum's collections, and connect to the museum's research.
North Campus won't be officially open until June of 2013 for the museum's centennial celebrations. So if you're eager to see the new landscape, you're going to have to wait a little longer. Heather Ritchie, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Nuha Abu-Jabbar to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Nuha?
Thanks, Ben. Tonight on ATVN, Vice President Joe Biden is making a brief stop in Los Angeles today. Find out more on why he's in the area. Meanwhile, on campus, some policy changes are in the works for bike safety. And finally, this Sunday is Earth Day, but Caltrans has already started cleaning up California's roadways. That and much more tonight on ATVN.
Nuha, thank you very much.
Thanks.
We'll be right back. Well, that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from ATVN and Madeline Lindsay. Esther Kang is our producer. Emily Frost is our executive producer. And from all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb. Have a fantastic weekend.